This Tuesday, as you may or may not know, because it doesn't get publicized that much, is Veterans Day. And Veterans Day was originally established right after World War I. It was called Armistice Day at the time, and it was a holiday that was set up, not really a holiday, but a day to honor those who had served their country in the military. And I happen to be a veteran myself, military veteran, and my father was before me, and his father before him. So this has always been a holiday that's been brought to my attention growing up. And I'd like to invite, I like to do this every year, any of you who have served in the military or had a child who has served in the military, I'd like to ask you to stand so we can honor you, please. You know, in this country, we've always had an interesting relationship with the military. Whenever we feel like our freedom is being threatened, like in World War II, for example, we see the military as heroes. But whenever we feel that the war we are involved in, where there's some conflict in the country about whether we should be in it or not, we saw it in Vietnam, we're seeing it now in the Middle East, we look at the military in a different way. We look at the higher-ups in the military, and we think they're making big mistakes, but we still see the people on the ground as sacrificing, which they are, and we honor them. There are always people on both sides of the spectrum. But if you study military history, which is actually something that we all need to do, even as peace-loving people, which we are in this teaching, we need to study military history if we intend to stop having wars. Because when you look at it, some very interesting patterns of behavior become immediately obvious. Now, the interesting thing is when wars begin and the battles are being fought, instead of just reflecting military and political thinking, which is what you'd expect, the patterns that actually lead to war and tend to perpetuate it until finally it finishes with all the pain that happens from that, those patterns actually reflect human nature. In other words, whenever there's a war, it is always caused by the same things that cause conflict in most people's lives every single day. Only this time they're showing up on the international scene. All these different feelings like anger and revenge and self-righteousness and arrogance and greed and intolerance and every other negative emotion you could think of. Of course, during the war itself, in the battles, we hear all sorts of stories about heroism and courage and kindness and compassion and loyalty and a lot of other good emotions, but those are not the cause of the war. Obviously, they exist in spite of it. You know, in every war that's ever been fought, and you can go back thousands and thousands of years up to the present day, and they've been fought in virtually every country in the world, people like you and people like me and our parents and our children and our brothers and our sisters end up fighting and killing one another for some really dumb reasons. And the reasons these things happen almost never change. Now, the people change. The countries change, even the weapons change, but we keep on fighting over the same dumb things, over land or race or religion or resources or power or whatever it happens to be. So we never really fight a new war. We only fight the same old battles over and over again. Now, with that in mind, I want to tell you a story. And it's a true story, a little history thing here. In 1944, towards the end of World War II, in the Pacific Theater at the time, there was a Japanese lieutenant by the name of Hiro Onoda. He was 22 years old, an intelligent officer, and the Japanese had just been forced out of the Philippines by General MacArthur, and Lieutenant Onoda was sent with three men to a small remote island in the southern Philippine Islands, an island called Lubang, and his mission was to conduct guerrilla warfare against the enemies of the emperor. And he was ordered by his superiors, all of the men were ordered, that they had to continue fighting until they were killed, and they were not allowed to commit suicide, which was an option that was left to many of the Japanese early in the war. So, along with the three others, he went into the jungle and he started fighting. This was in 1944. Unfortunately, they were so good at avoiding the enemy, they never officially found out that the war had ended in 1945. So for 29 years, Lieutenant Onoda and his fellow soldiers continued to live in the jungle, living on coconuts and bananas and evading search parties and then having ambushes, fighting people that they believed were enemy agents, enemy scouts, or enemy soldiers. And over time, over that 29 years, the other three men died. Two of them were killed, and one of them died of natural causes. But finally, in March of 1972, this is almost 29 years later, after finally being talked into speaking with his original superior officer from 1944, who they had to send from Japan with new orders, he surrendered and he came out of the jungle. Now, this could be kind of a sad but funny story, but it's really not. Because during those 29 years, even though the war was completely over, he and his men killed over 30 people and wounded over 100, believing that they were enemies, even though they were not. Now, because of the unusual circumstances, he was pardoned. He was returned to Japan, which he found to be quite a different place in 1972 than it was in 1944. So he was so appalled at the new attitudes in Japan that he eventually moved to Brazil. He bought a ranch. He's raising cattle. I couldn't find an obituary or death, so he's probably still alive, which makes him about 87 years old. Now, the reason I mention this story, and we've all heard ones like it, but this one was a true one, even though there are those people who would criticize or make fun of these people for continuing to fight a war that had been over for many years, we do it all the time. All the time. In our lives, we continue to build and to maintain walls, to sharpen our weapons, and to strengthen our defenses against events and people that stopped fighting us a long, long time ago. For example, we all know people who continue to argue and fight in their relationships today in exactly the same way that their parents fought when they were a child. We all know people who continue to talk about how wrong their ex was, even though the divorce was 20 years ago. You know any people like that? I know a few. And we all, none of you, they're in the second service. Okay. And we all know people who are constantly trying to prove themselves or to protect themselves against criticism the same way they did back in the seventh grade. But the saddest of all are those people who maintain feelings of anger, blame, fear, whatever it happens to be, towards someone who is no longer even living on the planet. And I see that a lot too. Now, in all these cases, it's obvious to any of them who sees someone talking about these things, when we're looking at it from the outside in, it's obvious that the people that these people are fighting against, which is really what they're doing, they're fighting against these people, are no longer the real problem, but their memories are. That's where the conflict still remains alive and well many years later. They're no longer fighting to protect themselves or to defend themselves. They are now fighting to defend an old belief that they have been unable or unwilling to release. And if you don't think they are fiercely defending it, just try and get them to change it. Try to talk them out of it. Now, the problem this creates, if we're doing this, the problem it creates in our lives, these problems are caused by what the military calls, the military term is collateral damage. And collateral damage is the term used when there is damage being caused over there as an unintended result of a battle that's being fought over here. Only in this case, in our lives, we're talking about the damage being caused out there by the battle that's being fought in here. The battle that's being fought in here. Now, that damage can show up in a lot of different ways. In terms of our relationships, it shows up as every other relationship that suffers because we're still angry at how the first one turned out. In work, it could show up as every job that we fail at because of the way we were treated back in the first job we had when we were in high school. In terms of health, it shows up as the stress, as the pain, or the illness and disease that we experience because of the anger that we are continuing to cultivate over something that happened a long time ago. I remember watching a documentary a few years ago, and there were several war veterans from World War II who were being interviewed about a battle that they had all fought in together in the same small unit. I think it was the Battle of the Bulge or one of the large battles of World War II. And it's amazing how two people who were in the same place at the same time can have absolutely different memories. Absolutely different memories. But it was especially interesting how differently their lives progressed after the war, which was a direct result of how they dealt with their memories. Some of them were able to shrug it off, to get past it, but some of them never ever recovered. Some of them remembered their war experience positively as one of the greatest experiences of their life. Some of them became homeless, alcoholic, or committed suicide. Some became millionaires and successful business people. Some of them even ran for president during that same group. The point is, the way in which any of our past experience affects us is always determined not by what that experience actually was, but by how we remember it. Because no matter how dramatic any experience in our past was, whether it was the moon landing, some of us are old enough to remember that, or 9/11, or the assassinations of President Kennedy or Dr. King, however dramatic that event was, no two people remember it the same. So it's never the actual events of our life that shape our life. It's how we choose to think about those things in the present. Now, memory's a very interesting thing, both psychologically and spiritually. Dr. Holmes says that our memory is part of our soul, the part of us that takes the intelligence and creates it, that's in the soul part, into the manifestation or the things that we have. You've all heard the quote, we all know that, from Santayana, those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And there's certainly some truth in that. Because mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, the way in which we evolve, and we're constantly evolving, is by learning things. And memory's an important part of that. Dr. Holmes tells us this. He says that we can use our power to make conscious choices in a way that causes certain things to appear. That's really the crux of this teaching. We are aware of what we are thinking, we choose our thoughts, and we create what we want. We do that through what he calls the law of cause and effect. That's how we create our life. We direct the power of the one creative mind that we call God, and as we direct that power, which is always there with us, always supporting us, always ready to work for us, as we direct it, our thoughts and our beliefs are reflected as our life experiences. It's a process, and the better we become at this process, the happier we tend to be. But what happens after we do the first part of the process is just as important, because after we have consciously created something in our life, a relationship, a business, a financial situation, whatever it is, that's when we have to continue staying aware and start to use what we would call our God-given intelligence, tempered with a little spiritual understanding and a little bit of inner wisdom that we all have, even if we don't use it, to see if the experiences that we have created are working for us or whether they're still working against us. So we decide if they are helping us to grow, to evolve. Now, if they are helping us to grow or evolve, then we're fine. We don't have to do anything. But if they are not, instead of staying with them, we need to chalk it up to experience and try not to repeat that same pattern next time. So the bad experiences that we have become a memory that we can actually put up on the shelf in our mind under a category called mistakes. Mistakes, all right? And we've all got enough titles under that category to stock a good-sized library, probably, if we put them up there, okay? Now, that's the way it's supposed to work, and it sounds pretty easy. Now, we certainly need to remember the things in our past that we didn't like or that didn't work out, but we only need to remember enough about them so that we can keep from doing them over again. That's how we use our memory in a healthy, intelligent, and supportive way. The problem is that is not usually the way that we do it. We usually look at our memories like trophies. We put them on a shelf, but we keep a light shining on them. We take them down and dust them every so often. We show everybody, have you seen my divorce? I got this great. Have you seen my this? Have you seen my that? Okay, we treat them like trophies all the time. Now, when we do this, lots of these memories also change and become more elaborate while we have them. So when we are talking to people about our old battles, it's funny how through the years in our story, everybody know what your story is? Okay? Ask your friends. They'll tell you what your story is, okay? Through the years in our stories, we become stronger and more heroic while our enemies become more evil. It's just like the history books. You know, that's what we do to ourselves. In fact, some people spend so much time on those old memories that they never get around to making any new ones. And why should we if we do that? I mean, we've got it, these old stories memorized. We've made ourselves look really good in them, you know, so why should we change them? But the unfortunate result of not changing our memories or our story is that we never change. We never grow, and we never find peace. We never find peace. We keep fighting the same old battles, we keep making the same old mistakes, and we keep running into the same old dead ends, which gets really, really old. Now, my teacher, Kennedy Schultz, Dr. Schultz, I loved it. Once he said that some people have 30 years of experience, while other people have 1 year of experience 30 times. That's how their memories go, okay? As creative beings, able to create from where we are to wherever we want to be, that's not the way we want to live. Now, for each one of us individually, and for the planet as a whole, because we're all in this together, memory serves a useful purpose. It keeps us from having to reinvent the wheel. It allows other people's memories to keep us from making mistakes. It allows us to get ideas that we can piggyback on other people's ideas to create even better things. But it also has certain limitations. The problem comes when we give our memories more power than they deserve. Now, to understand how to use memory in the best way possible, we have to understand exactly what it is. And that's what I'm going to talk about. Because most people see the power of memory as being in the experience that they remember, but that's not it at all. Where the power really is in the way that we choose to remember that experience, not just once, but over and over and over again in every present moment. Dr. Holmes writes in The Science of Mind, he says, our memory is an unconscious operation of what was once a conscious thought. That's pretty profound. Our memory is an unconscious operation of what was once a conscious thought. And let me explain what he means there. Because this is an extremely important process for anyone to understand who wants to stop repeating old behaviors and start creating new experiences. It means, quite simply, that our memories are always in the present. That's all it means. Our memories are always in the present. Now, the events themselves are in the past, but our thoughts and our beliefs and our opinions and our assumptions about those events are always happening right now, because our mind, just like the one universal mind that we're all part of, only works in the present. So we can think about the past, but we can't think in the past. We can think about the future, we can't think in the future. The action of mind is always in the here and now. Now, the reason this is so important is because the only thing we ever really have control over in our life, and I mean the only thing, is what we are thinking in the present moment. That's the only thing we really have power over. Everything else comes from that. So our response to some situation that we went through some years before, with all the thoughts and the emotions that we had at the time, was perfectly valid at the time because we had a certain consciousness. But the pain that we felt back then is no longer necessary for two obvious reasons. First of all, the event itself is over and done. The war is over, so to speak. And second, we are not the same person that we were then when we had that response. We have grown, we're stronger, hopefully, we handle it better, and we don't feel the need or the desire any longer to keep on fighting. When we can give up that desire to keep fighting the past, that's when we start to grow. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people, including some of us on occasion, who will not stop fighting. Now, our decisions are made in the present because that's the only place they can be made, but we keep fighting and fighting and fighting using beliefs that we have been holding on since it's happened. It's like people who are, in a way, it's like people who are still stuck in the disco era, okay? They've got these Village People albums and stuff that were printed in 1970, but they keep playing them today over and over and over again, taking the old idea and do it to the, doing it over and over now. Now, this is true about people whose past experiences were negative, and they're fighting those, but it's also true, as an aside, about good experiences, because being caught in the memory can be a trap, all right? For example, there are people who blame all their problems today on the fact that their parents were alcoholics when they grew up, and they've been out of the house 30 years ago, or that their spouse ran off and left them, or their partner left them, whatever it was. Then there are those people who are trapped in the past who talk about nothing but high school or college or their first boyfriend or girlfriend because those were the best days of their life. Either way, What they are doing is they're allowing memories of the past to control their present, and by controlling their present, they are actually writing their future. Now, there's nothing wrong with doing this. It's just very, very limiting. You see, for some reason, we tend to look at our past by attaching the emotions to the events. So a lot of our memories, we think that we can't remember the experience without remembering the pain that goes with it. But we don't have to. Now, since we haven't figured out how to erase the memory, every time the memory comes up, we take the emotions and the pain with it. So what we need to start doing is to recognize when the thought comes in about the event in the past, we don't need to take the negative emotions with it. It's like if you've ever hit your finger with a hammer, maybe 5 years ago, did it hurt at the time? Did it? How do you know? I remember it, right? The question is, does it still hurt now? And if it's not hurting now, that tells us that physically we can have the memory without taking the pain along with it. We can do the same thing emotionally and spiritually. We can have the memory, but we can leave the pain back in the past. We don't need to keep on fighting it. Now, it takes a little time and it takes a little practice, but our memory can be trained to take direction. It takes some practice, spiritual practice. When we become spiritually aware at a deep enough level of what we are thinking and feeling about the past and how it's controlling us, we can actually shift our thinking from destructive beliefs about the past to constructive beliefs in the present. So instead of remembering death, we can choose to remember life. Instead of remembering pain and suffering, we can choose to remember health and wholeness. Instead of remembering the anger and the fear, we can choose to remember love. But nobody can choose it for us. We have to do it for ourselves. Now, the good news is, as we start to put these memories in their proper place, as we learn to keep the lesson, but to let go of the pain and to let go of the drama, we start to find that we can move forward in life much more peacefully without having to protect or to defend ourselves all the time, without having to fight for all the things we desire or to force other people to change. In other words, we can stop fighting all of the old battles. And as we get better and better at it, we may even discover, to our great delight, that it's a lot easier to live that way. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine, and so it is. Oh, thank you. All right. Let's take a few moments now in silence. And in this silence, with these words, these thoughts, these feelings, let's recognize that the presence, the power of spirit that is with us always supports us. It is always completely with us in the here and now. It does not hold us to our past mistakes. It does not punish us. It only supports us. So as we allow ourselves to feel this connection with this power, with this presence, and as we feel so deeply connected here in the now, we recognize that as we are creating our life, we are creating it with the wisdom within us. We are creating it with the supportive spirit that we have. We are creating it in powerful ways. And that we no longer need to be locked in the past. We can look behind us and forgive those who harmed us. We can look in the past and we can forgive ourselves for our bad decisions. We can look behind us and smile and release and take the lesson and leave the pain. As we begin to do this, we feel stronger, we feel lighter, our mind becomes clearer, our heart becomes more open, and we are able to grow without carrying all the old baggage. So I invite you now to take a few moments in the silence of your own heart and mind and take a memory that you remember that you may have locked away, something you may have talked about a lot, something that is causing you pain, and put that memory in the center of your mind's eye and allow yourself to release the pain, simply watching it dissolve, but holding that memory with love and forgiveness. Take these few moments for yourself. with gratitude for this awareness and a deep understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept the power that we have been given to release the past. We accept the power that we have to create the future, and we accept the ability we have to have thoughts of love instead of thoughts of fear, to have thoughts of knowing the presence of this power in each and every one of us. This is our truth. With gratitude and thanksgiving, we accept it and we release it into consciousness, knowing that it is our truth from this moment on, and so it is.